Who's up for talking nonsense?
Who's up for talking nonsense? This is Terry and the American Jezebel.
Do you want me to start this?
Yeah. So we're keeping track of time for all of you out there, so you don't talk nonsense for hours, because we can, as it turns out, talk nonsense for hours.
But you don't want to listen to nonsense for hours.
No, Dr. No Nonsense would not listen to it. Nobody else wants to listen to it. But we appreciate those of you that are willing to sit in for 25 or 30 minutes and listen to some nonsense. So we're starting off our talking nonsense. This is episode one. Talking nonsense. We're starting out episode one with...
the movie that we're with. What's our first piece of nonsense?
Correct.
Are we starting out with the right into our main
Absolutely.
Main attraction
Absolutely.
Is what we're starting with?
Okay. Absolutely.
So all of you are new listeners, because this is the first episode. So we'd like to let you know that every couple of weeks here on Talking Nonsense, we are going to be reviewing a coming of age story. This will mostly be teen dramas, but teen comedies, but not necessarily just about the teens.
No, as it turns out, you can come of age at any
age.
As
it turns out, that's true.
So we like to think that it's maybe not so much coming of age. Remember, we were talking about, it's more like liminal movies. That
can you tell us what liminal means?
Liminal, yeah. Well, you know, Terry has a big dictionary for all the words he doesn't know what they mean, but he likes to say them. Because it makes him sound like he's not talking nonsense. I'm talking to you, Debbie. And so liminal is the space that exists between two things, between the was and the is, which is important for our movie, because our movie this week is really about the was and the is.
It really is.
And then there's that other space, that liminal space, that's the becoming. And probably the classic tale of becoming is Peter Pan. You know, the liminal space is the space between childhood and adulthood. And Peter Pan is trapped in between that. And so it's like the classic tale of liminalness.
So Neverland is literally the liminal space.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, going back to our movie, what's her name that's in love with this librarian?
Oh, Rebecca.
Rebecca.
Aquafina.
Yeah,
yes.
Beck. Who is a lover of philosophy in the movie, she would say, well, Hegel would say that it's the Hegelian space of becoming. It's not the was or the is, but it's the becoming. So Mr. Bemis and Bex would both revel in the Hegelian aspect of liminal. But that's a little bit of a spoiler alert for the movie.
Yeah, so this week, our inaugural episode, we will be reviewing the film Dude.
Dude.
Which is a Netflix original film, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
A Netflix original film that came out just a couple of months ago. It's a very recent release.
Very recent.
So here at Talking Nonsense, we are all about the being up to date.
Yes. One of us.
Yes.
So there's lots of young people in the movie and lots of people that are current stars that one of us does not know. I don't know these people. And then one of us does know them.
I could tell you about all four of the main girls, and I did keep track as we went along of beloved sitcom actors that show up in minor roles as teachers and administrators and other background characters.
Mm-hmm. And then maybe just a little preview. At the end of our little discussion about the movie, we will rate the movie, and we'll discuss our rating system, and we'll give our ratings at the end so that we can recommend or not recommend based on our rating system to you.
Terry, would you like to jump in and talk a little bit more about Dude?
I would like to talk about Dude. So, as it turns out, Talking Nonsense came about partly because we like to talk nonsense and partly because one of us, the American Jezebel, was just in love with Lady Bird and so suggested that lots of people watch Lady Bird. So I watched Lady Bird, and the American Jezebel's boyfriend, the narco-syndicalist.
Although he would like me to say at this point, he does not identify with a political affiliation of any kind.
He watched it as well. And so then he got on a whole kick of watching coming-of-age dramas, which I'm a follower. I am a jump on the bandwagon. So I jumped on and started watching them myself, own self. And so Dude was one of the ones that came up in my, since you watched, you may like. And so I watched Dude. Dude's about four female friends living in Southern California, and always mysterious circumstances behind their wealth and access to all kinds of things. So we will not be critiquing that part of it, the trope where teens have all kinds of access to all kinds of stuff, and you go, what? Because they're also looking for financial aid for college.
Mm-hmm. So I'm not really sure. Despite driving brand new Subarus, living in houses with pools and pool houses and guest houses and
yes,
buying what would probably be pretty expensive amount of drugs.
Yes.
I'm thinking that the amount of weed consumed in the film probably cost them a good amount of money as well.
Yes. That is correct. And so the story revolves around these four friends, and I would say specifically around the relationship to men, boys. Yes, it can be also their fathers. There's two of them that have a situation with their father, one of them that has a situation with an older man, mm-hmm. and then one of them particularly with her brother. Although the one's brother is maybe the American Jezebel's favorite character.
I just laugh when it came on screen.
And so in terms of coming of age dramas, I particularly like this. And so we're not going to lay out the points of the movie. Then this happened and this happened and this happened. I'm just going to start in by talking nonsense by saying I like it when there's a break in the traditional tropes. So most of the coming of age, everybody's going to some big university. I got to get into Harvard. I got to get into Yale. I got to get into NYU. These mm-hmm. seem to be the big ones. These three come up quite a lot. And in this one, one of the main characters is going to going to Columbia.
She is going to Columbia,
and her
yes.
friend has applied to NYU, but doesn't know if she's going to get in. And the friend is trying to decide if she's going to go to UC Santa Barbara. And so I love this aspect of the trope where the person starts to evaluate the university for the fit in their life, not for its name brand. And so it's one of the things I loved about the movie. But the movie is looking at their end of high school. So they're going down to adulthood. And kind of the climactic or the dramatic turning point, the setup for the tension, the dramatic tension in the show. And this is a spoiler alert. So if you're watching, this will be a spoiler alert. Not unlike the one that we'll have later for the Spectacular Now. Get out of the car! Bam! This is that thing. I love
Although
you, girls.
It's a spoiler that happens in the first 5 minutes of
the
movie.
Oh, really? It happens very quickly.
It's the first thing that happens in the movie.
It's not as jarring as the Spectacular Now.
No.
But it is. When the screen goes dark and you only hear screeching cars, you know it's going to end up bad. And it ends up bad for the brother, Thomas.
Terrible man bun brother, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, terrible
messy
man bun.
Man, blonde man bun.
Yeah, the American Jezebel loved the hair. The hair was incredible in the movie.
Oh, everybody's hair was beautiful. It was another teen trope kind of thing. I mean, obviously they're all 25-year-olds playing 17, 18-year-olds. But all of them. I mean, the way that the mother and daughter looked most alike was they both had just waves and waves of shiny, shiny dark hair. They just had matching hair, and that's how you knew they were mother-daughter. Everybody just had the most beautiful, shiny hair in the movie.
Except dead brother with the man bun.
Yeah, dead brother's man bun was bad. The yeah. other brother had kind of bad hair, too. The men's hair was not as good as the women's hair. This was a movie made by women, and you can tell because the women's hair looks amazing, and the men's does not. They put a real emphasis on hair.
Yes. And on women's sexual pleasure.
They did. That
yes.
was.
Yes.
Except at one very critical point.
Well, that was, again, spoiler alert, if you have not seen the movie. So we will, at one point in this podcast, we'll recommend the next movie we're going to watch, because this is a bi-weekly or semi-monthly? What would that be, Dave Anthony? So,
shout out to our regular listener, Dave Anthony.
Dave Anthony, and the dollop, the big listeners of yes, the Talk of Nonsense.
Both Little Garthy and Dave Anthony.
Little Garthy? Anyway.
So we will recommend the next film that we're going to watch in advance so that our loyal listeners can watch the film before we get into a discussion of it in the next couple of weeks.
First and third Saturday of the month.
Yes.
First and third Saturday every month, you're going to be
getting... I think we've decided that right now.
We did.
That's... Okay, so, but we were talking about spoilers for the critical moment later in the film.
Correct. And so if you haven't seen the movie, then you're going to get the critical... This is the spoiler. But again, it's about... This movie is about young women. It's not about men. And so, as she puts it in the movie, I had a bad experience with a guy from Catcher High who was, shall we say, goal-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it is. It's a great... Again, one of the things I liked about the movie is that even in the, you know, the introductory setup of the drama of the movie, Thomas's car wreck, it all happens in the dark and you only hear cars crashing and then you see him at the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And so it isn't how he dies or the visual of his dying, it's his dying that's the event. And it's the same with, you know, this, you know, her experience with the Catcher High, Michael or something. And then
Mike. Yes.
Mike from Catcher High.
Ugh.
Who wears his leather, his letter jacket everywhere. So that gives you a clue of who he is, right?
But he's a 2018 jock teen because he also had a little earring. Did you notice? So, yeah, he's a 21st century horrible jock character.
Yeah. Not the worst. We'll get to that one in
not the worst.
Two other podcasts
not
from
the
now.
The worst. The bar has been set really low.
Yes. So he could not get under the bar.
Even
we won't
even
mention the name.
A creepy, creepoid, terrible, as we'll call him, goal-oriented young man.
Yeah. So in that scene, though, again, you can tell it's made by a woman because right away she sets up the interaction by saying, you know, no need for a balloon party. We're not having sex. And so the character that's dictating the sexual relationship is the young woman until he gets all out of control, Michael. And so then when you watch her response to him, it's actually really, you know, a human response, which is very different from a lot of movies you see. And so, you know, I really appreciate it. So the movie has all kinds of goofiness, lots of drugs, lots of silliness.
There's a lot of you can also tell this is a movie written by women because they talk about tampons a lot. There's a there's a funny tampon scene where they talk to some cops about tampons, where they get out of things, as ladies sometimes do, by pretending to have their periods if they don't want to be in a situation.
Yep.
So there's a lot of that kind of body humor.
Yeah, the drug counseling class.
Yes.
That had octopuses in.
What was a coconut octopus? I don't know.
It's
a real mystery. If anyone can solve the mystery of why someone would do a science project on something called a coconut octopus, I would love to know.
I think they were comparing and contesting. That was my intent.
Maybe that's what it was.
But
is a coconut an opposite of an octopus?
Getting to the liminal part of it, because we're running out of time, right? This is why.
I have a lot more things I want to talk about, too.
Talking nonsense. But the liminal part of it is that at one point, the mother of the dead boy, Thomas, and his sister, Chloe, who's one of the foursome, are in the bed, and it's his birthday. It's 1 year since he's passed away. And the mom says, it wasn't supposed to be like this. And the daughter said, but this is what it is. And then they cry and cry and cry. And then later in the movie, they have a fight because after the incident with the jock that's goal-oriented, she's really mad at her friends because they let her go off with somebody by herself.
And then left her.
Yep. And so it is this great thing where she's mad because she's like, we're supposed to take care of each other. You know, so I like that too, that she wasn't mad at them most, you know, for leaving me behind, but she was mad because she was like, we were supposed to take care of each other and they didn't. So I like that part of that, but she has the altercation with her friend, right? And her friend said, you know, because she's upset that her friend is not going to go to NYU because they were going to be together forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how could anybody be friends with you who didn't know Thomas? And then her friend says to her, it's hard enough for me to grieve what was and grieve what is. I can't grieve what might be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so again, she said, I can't make the liminal be about grief.
And that's so much what they're concerned about too throughout the movie too, that she is, because there's a way that she's a really interesting, the main kind of the main character, Lucy Hale from famously from Pretty Little Liars. She's this
Lily?
really,
Lil?
yeah, her name is Lily in the movie, and she I thought she was just an interesting character too, because she has to be in control at all times. She's this very typical kind of type A teenage girl who's the student body president, and a lot of the movie is concerned with her planning the prom and trying to con and she's really wants to be in control of every situation that she's in. She wants to control the choices that her friends make along with her own choices. And then I think too, the reason that moment with Mike the jock is such a pivotal part of the movie too, is because she's not in control in that situation. And I think that's partially why she freaks out so much afterwards at her friends too, because, in that earlier scene that she has with the other, with the uke playing Jew should stick together songster boy, she is very much in control of that situation. And then
Correct.
they really set up this second situation as one where she's not at all in control. And so she's even trying to control their nostalgia for high school before it even happens. And so I think that part of that, going back to that liminal space idea, is that like she can't really control what that becoming is. And I think that that's where most of that tension for her comes out of.
And then the movie, I think the other great thing about it is that, as it tries to exist inside this liminal space and say, so that's what was, that's what this is what is, but what will become, then they have this undercurrent of this relationship between Awkwafina and Mr. Bemis, between Beck, who are in love with philosophy, and so they love each other, and he's the older man in her life. We're not sure what's going on with her parents.
Yeah, we don't see any dads. We hear about the dads. We don't see any
We
dads.
see Chloe's dad. He's just out smoking a cigarette on Thomas's birthday, remember? He's just,
Oh, we do see him briefly. And then we see Amelia's dad fighting with the mom at the graduation party because they're going through the acrimonious divorce.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, but
But we don't
very
know about
rare.
Beck's family very much.
But anyway, so they love philosophy. So they say the same thing. They say three times because they want to make it clear to those of us who are watching and who are not paying attention that.
What endures when all else's change? It is love.
Correct.
Which is them telling us the thesis of the movie, I
It is. It
think.
is exactly. And the movie does it, right?
Yeah. And I think when they meet up on the baseball field at prom, because in coming of age dramas, important things always happen to you at prom.
They leave the lights on.
She says, that they can't control what's going to happen, but that they will continue to love each other.
Correct.
And so they're restating that thesis that comes from Baxton and Mr. Bemis.
Yep. So this is really a philosophical.
It's very
It's a
philosophical.
very philosophical. Even when the cop stops her, at one point she's so upset that she's driving her car and she stops and she sees her friend back interviewing a new roommate and she's like, "How could she leave me? How could she take a new friend?" And then she just starts bad mouthing her and she's just sitting there. And as she's sitting there, she somebody's calling in. Do we have our first caller?
It's the New York Times.
The New York Times is calling. New York Times, this is talking nonsense. How can we help you?
They already heard about the hot new podcast hitting the airwaves.
But she stops in a car, and then the cop pulls over to come and get in. The cop is played by.
Garrett, one of these stoners from Parks and from the Animal Control Department of Parks and Rec, and also, oh, is his name Garrett on Superstore as well? I don't know. He's also in Superstore.
Yeah, he's the one that does the announcements
He's the
and.
announcer on Superstore.
So
Yes.
he plays the cops. And anyway, so he stops her and he's like, "You just can't stop. There are people that are going places. There are people that have other things to do. The world doesn't revolve around you and your life. You can't just stop." And so he's talking about her driving, but of course, because it's this philosophical treaty, he's actually talking about her and her relationship with Thomas and her relationship with her friends, that she cannot just stop. That she has to keep going. And so even the interaction with the cop is undercurrents of philosophical treatises on the becoming. So in terms of a liminal drama, they crushed it.
They did.
They crushed it.
couple other things that I wanted to talk about when it comes to the movie, too. Well, there's a couple things that I would like to... There's a the new segment that I'd like to introduce inside of this main segment of reviewing and talking about the film. It's a little bit less philosophical than what we have been talking about. But I think I'd like to introduce Trope Watch 2018.
Trope Watch 2018. We need some music for this.
We will. Welcome to Trope Watch 2018 featuring Dude. What were some of the biggest tropes that you saw in the film, Dude? We've talked a little bit about it already. I'm going to come up with important things happen to you at your high school prom is a real trope of teen films. If listeners want to call in and tell us about a time that something important happened to you at your prom, I'd love to hear a real life example of this happening.
Okay. And so I've already mentioned we're only going to big name universities trope.
Yeah, there are three universities in the country, and they are Harvard, Yale, NYU.
That's it. There's no other universities of the other 8,000. What is that? 8,000 universities in America?
We need Dr. No Nonsense.
We did not get, but I think it's about 8,000 universities in America.
In teen movies?
Three. and we'll come back to this when we watch the candy jar.
Oh, yes. we also already mentioned the how are they all so wealthy and it is never explained. The mother is a single mother who wears a lot of flowered scarves, so I think she works as a psychologist or a psychiatrist, maybe.
We have no idea what she does.
But somehow she's a single mother with three children who owns a house with probably 10 bedrooms and a guest house and a pool. Her teenager has a brand new car and they spend a lot of money on drugs. How are people so wealthy?
Okay.
Any other big tropes you can think about in it?
Well, so I'm going to go with the trope of really together because they've suffered trauma and the parents aren't together. Mm. So the child is wiser than the parent trope.
Yes.
And so
the child takes care of the parents.
Oldest child is taking care of the parents and taking care of the other two children.
Yeah, that's a big one as well. I feel like there were a couple more.
Well, I was going to break to a segment within the segment within the segment, which was the untrope, but now I forgot what the untrope was because I was listening
to
you.
The way that it breaks apart tropes?
Oh, I just remembered it. Thank you for saying that.
Okay.
So this is let's have some theme music. Untrope 2018. Okay, so like in shows, I think even in, what is it, Silicon Valley, they point out the obvious. So every group has in Silicon Valley has the four nerdy white guys and the token Asian. Mm-hmm. And so in this movie, when you watch it, you would go, oh yeah, they're the two main characters who are white, mm-hmm. and then they have their token ethnic friends. Mm-hmm. So they have their Asian friend and their black friend. Mm-hmm. And at one point in the movie, the Asian friend and the black friend are at prom and they said, hey, where's our token white friends at? Untroped 2018.
Untroped. Now returning back to regular tropes.
Theme music?
Yes. Returning back to Trope Watch 2018, we have again the student-teacher relationship of a high school student and a teacher at the high school. That is a real trope of the genre. We will probably encounter it again. I'm not saying in this particular case it's... I don't have a... There was a lot that was good about that, this one. I'm not necessarily critiquing it in this case, but having a student-teacher relationship in a high school movie is a classic trope as well.
Right. And we actually had three.
Three student-teacher relationships?
Correct. We had the one romantic. Awkwafina.
Yes, we had the romantic
and
one.
And then we had the ne'er-do-well teacher who calls out the student who is somewhat ne'er-do-well, who calls out the teacher for being ne'er-do-well. So that's Kenny from Kenneth.
Oh, Kenneth the Page.
Yeah.
Yes.
Aren't you supposed to be in my class right now?
Oh, yes. And then
aren't
she said...
Aren't you supposed to be in your class right now? Let's not pretend like this didn't happen. Mm-hmm. What didn't happen? Mm-hmm. So the two ne'er-do-wells embracing each other's ne'er-do-wellism. So we always have that trope as a teacher. And then the teacher who has the heartfelt, you know, I want you to go forward and you're going to need to delegate.
Mm-hmm. Yes, wise teacher.
The wise teacher who calmly dispenses their wisdom but is not attached to the student taking it. And then in the end, the student reluctantly does take it, but doesn't acknowledge the teacher's input. So we had three teacher-student tropes
wrapped into one. Yes, well, and those are all classic student-teacher tropes as well. We also have, I had a few more. Promposals are always terrible. Never do a promposal. Although in this one, they kind of turn that on their head because everyone was embarrassed by the promposal that happened. But we should just, oh, and then the last one that I wanted to talk about, the last big one that I wanted to talk about was, how are there college orientations that happen in May? Throughout the film, they keep referencing that she can't go to prom because she's going to a pre-frosh orientation at UC Santa Barbara. There is no orientation that happens before high school is over. And this is something that we will again see come up over and over again.
Well, will we?
Yes.
Like
we'll see it
in two more showings?
In a couple weeks. We will see it. Also, people singing happy birthday and everyone being uncomfortable about it. It's just always awkward when people sing happy birthday in films, unless you're Lobster Todd in Easy A, and then it's very charming.
Oh, it's super charming.
The last thing...
Hap, 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 hap.
A hip, hop, hip, hop. It's your birthday. That might need to be a music cue if I can find it. The last thing that I wanted to talk about talking about the movie in general, this is not a really big philosophical thing, but one of the things that I also enjoyed, well, the fact you could definitely tell with the young women's sexuality that it was written by a woman. There's a scene where a student masturbates in a bathroom stall, and it is a girl, which you never hear very often. And one of the other characters said, "I masturbate at school all the time." Gives you a great burst of energy. And then the last thing that I wanted to say is that I really enjoyed how many important things happen in cars in the movie. This is kind of a trope of teen films, but I think it's actually one of the ones that I don't want to call out for being untrue that just shows up in movies. I think this is a really true thing, and it's one of the things that I really enjoyed. Like, there are teen movies that are about cars, right? There's American Graffiti. There's all these ones where the car itself is very important. But I think that unless you grow up in like a really big city where you just take public transportation, and I have friends for whom that's true. But I think in general, if you're a teen that grows up, and a lot of teen movies are about teens that grow up in the suburbs or teens who grow up in the city who still need to drive. And I remember this was very true for me as a teenager. It's like the first time that you have a space that's outside of like your parents' house or your friend's parents' house. It's a space that's, even if it's your parents' car, that you have this new autonomy that you never had before. And so lots of really important things happen in cars when you're a teenager, and I think that that's actually very true, because it is like this sort of symbol of your teenage independence, even if it's not real independence. And so in the movie, they smoke weed in the car together, they have these good they have conversations in the car together. She just drives around because she's sad. At one point she just says, "I was just sad driving," and I think that's a thing that people do as well in real life. There's all these important things that happen in the cars without them talking about it, and I just wanted to say that that was one of the things that I really enjoyed so much, because I was thinking that this was one of the things that rang really true for me as a teen girl. Like, I wasn't, you know, doing ecstasy at parties in high school. But like, I had a friend in high school where we would just sometimes go and have car talks, where we would just sit in the car and just talk to each other about stuff. And I've rarely had that of any experience like that, of being in that kind of space and talking to a friend. So we called it car talks. We would go and have a talk in the car. So I just wanted to call that other thing out that I really enjoyed about the film, was that undercurrent of emphasis on that kind of theme that I think shows up a lot in these kind of movies as well.
That was a nonsense.
That was a nonsense. But hey, Liminal Space was a nonsense either.
Yeah, that's right. It could have been.
There's some non-nonsense things.
Yeah, that may be true. Okay, that's a great segue, though.
Into another of our segments.
Another of our segments.
Do we need some theme music for the segment?
Okay.
Welcome to Pitch a Car to an Anarcho-Syndicalist.
Pitching a car to an anarcho-syndicalist. What should we pitch to him today?
So I think, Terry, you were going to pitch a car to the anarcho-syndicalist. What kind of car would you like?
Well, I do have. And so I'm going to go. Well, here's the thing about the anarcho-syndicalist. We do not want him to buy or drive or own or service a car I don't want to be. Help me out on this one. I don't want to buy,
Buy, sell,
sell,
or process any car or
or
I
be
can't.
sold or buy from or anyway, we'll
He
get the
has a whole
quote right.
thing.
So this has to be a car from a corporation that is no longer in business. So we're going to buy cars of, as they're known in the trade, orphan brands. These are orphans. They're no longer in existence. They no longer have a parent company to back them up. So today we're going to pitch our first car to the narco-syndicalists. We're going with a 1974 AMC Hornet.
What can you tell us about the AMC Hornet,
Well, I
Terry?
can tell you a couple things about the AMC Hornet. Number one, it lives up to its reputation as being just junk, absolute junk. If you want lack of styling, they've got it. If you want lack of engineering, they have it. Plastic that's pretending to be wood, yes. Plaid interiors, yes. We could get it in a two-door, four-door, or a station wagon model. And my
What would
good
you say
friend.
about the color scheme of the AMC
Oh, I
Hornet?
would say if you're interested in some earth tones, this is the car for you.
The
Some
color scheme of the 70s?
mid-70s earth tones, some browns, some avocados, some sunflower, those kind of tones. Those are the kind. These cars are right up your alley. Some powder blue, some eggshell white, all the best colors that came out in those years. The great thing about these cars is these cars were a preference of governments. So particularly smaller governments, county governments or city governments, and they bought them by the fleet. So they're quite available. Maybe not in the best of shape. They don't have a long lifespan, but you can get some that were underdriven by older folks. And so I think we could get the narco-syndicalist a really nice let's call it mid-70s. This is the new thing that's coming. Forget mid-century modernism. We're going with mid-70s postmodernism.
I mean, don't we kind of like cycle through that way? So we must be
Absolutely.
headed towards a mid-70s cycle at this point.
Postmodernism.
Yeah, postmodernist
Get on the
mid-70s.
wagon. Get ahead of things. And so we would like to recommend, I think he can get like just a pristine one, like maybe 40 to 50,000 miles, original condition, in the $3,000 to $5,000 range.
That's a pretty good deal.
It's a great deal. One thing we forgot though, because I was so excited to transition from your insightful non-nonsense about the movie, was we did not rate our movie. Should we wrap up this
Oh, we
issue?
did,
Oh well,
yeah.
we didn't talk about our sponsors either. We had one sponsor. Should we bring in Dr. No Nonsense to have that sponsor?
Let's hear from Dr. No
And
Nonsense.
she's going to tell us about something she's really quite passionate about, which is nutritious nuts
Without the difficulty of
and
digesting.
without the difficulty of digestion. Come on in, Dr. No Nonsense.
This is Dr. No Nonsense. And I want to tell you about my favorite new product, which is called Sustaina Butter. It's pre-soaked nut butter produced in Summit County, Colorado. And it's tasty, tasty, very digestible nut butter product that's delicious.
And then another sponsor we have this week, we're sponsored also by Tony's Chocolonely. Tony's is making chocolate that I can't even remember how long now, since what, like 2008? They've been making it for about a decade. Tony's is all about slave-free chocolate. And I have to admit that I did not know that that chocolate was produced using slave labor. So that people were enslaved to produce chocolate. And so once I found out that this is what Tony was up to, I was all on board with Tony's chocolate. But it's one thing to be intellectually on board, but Tony's Chocolate Lonely, it is good chocolate. So this episode, like most episodes will be, is sponsored by Tony's Caramel and Sea Salt. It is just real good chocolate.
And the thing we have to say about our sponsors so far is we're calling them pre-committed sponsors. They have in no way actually financially supported us or I guess these are, also we could also call them alleged sponsors to protect ourselves from any kind of legal ramifications of claiming them as sponsors. So we want to thank Tony's and Sustain a Butter for their pre-commitment to being sponsors of this show.
Talking nonsense. All right, so let's rate that movie. Let's get to a rating.
Let's wrap up the show by doing a bit of a rating. Do you want to talk about the rating system?
I will talk about the rating system.
It's a bit mathy. It's kind of down your alley there, Terry.
Well, you could just jump right in as well because, you know, as an SAT, ACT test prep tutor, the American Jezebel is all over her math.
I'm pretty good at high school 11th grade math again at this point.
All right. So this is on an exponential system. So this is 10 of these equals 1 star. 100 of these equal 2 stars.
Mm-hmm.
1,000 of these equal 3 stars. 10,000 of these equal 4 stars. And 100,000 of these equal 5 stars. So this is an exponential rating system. And it's all based on the movie, which we'll review in 2 weeks, or 2 episodes. In episode 3, we will review. We've already seen pieces of. But that's another story of The Kissing Booth.
A Netflix original teen film, The Kissing Booth.
The Kissing Booth. So The Kissing Booth is rated at 1 kissing booth. It is 1 kissing booth. You can't get lower. You can't get a half a kissing booth or a third of a kissing booth or 0 kissing booths or negative. No.
Kissing booths, the rating system is greater than or equal to 1 kissing booth.
Kissing booth is the absolute
and,
0.
1 kissing booth is equivalent of how many stars?
It would be 0.1 star.
That's correct. So a 5-star film would be 100,000 kissing booths.
100,000 kissing booths. It's as big as you can get. A 1 star would be 10 kissing booths. A 2 star would be 100. So if you're below 100 kissing booths,
it's a pretty bad movie.
Pretty bad movie. If you're in the single digits, you are closing in on absolute 0.
Absolute unwatchability.
Unwatched. Should never be seen by humans again. That's where we're putting the kissing booth at. So, American Jezebel, what would you rate Dude at?
You know, I think Dude was a very solid entry into the genre. There were a lot of elements, particularly the ways that you could tell the fact that it was made by and for women that I really enjoyed. A lot of the other things that we've talked about in this episode led me to really think that this was a great great addition to the genre. I would recommend this to teens and adults, which we also realize is an important thing for those of us adults that like to watch a liminal space coming of age drama. I'm assigning it a numerical value. You know, I think I'd probably give it somewhere in, I'd give it about 25,000 kissing booths, I think.
25,000?
Yeah.
Oh.
Above 4 stars, I think.
Yeah.
You know, not quite, not into the, not close to the 6 digits, but
wow.
Pretty far up there.
Okay. I thought it was much better.
Oh, okay.
I really enjoyed this one. I thought it was really solid. Lots of undercurrents that you could pick apart. You know, the philosophical threads that ran through it. A solid character development. Nobody came out of left field to, like, surprise you. Or nobody dropped off at the end. Like, you were like, they just did what? Lots of setup for it. Strong character. So even though it was written by women, for women, about women, the men weren't just like throwaways. They were actually significant contributors to the women's lives.
Yeah. I was thinking, though, it's kind of like the opposite of the Bechdel test. I don't think there's a single scene where 2 men are talking to each other.
There's that brief moment when those 2 guys are trying to organize the party and they can't do it, so they ask for her help.
Oh, yeah. But it's even like they're talking to the girls at the same scene.
No, they were talking to each other. Well, in the scene, you're correct. There's no...
But do we know the name of the friend?
Oh, no, it doesn't pass that
test. We just know Sam.
Yeah,
but Sam was a great guy.
I really enjoyed
Sam.
Yep. As was the uke player.
I wrote down that he had a Muppet face in my notes. It's not a bad thing. He just had kind of a...
He had Muppet
cute little Muppety face.
Muppet
he
hair, too.
He was kind of a cute little Muppet
But
in the
he
movie.
Was a great character.
He was.
You know, he was really with her and held her to a certain, you know, expectations and wasn't completely gaga with her. And so he was a great character as well.
He was. Yeah,
and
you're
the
right.
brother.
The brother was.
Brother came in strong at the
strong.
End.
Very strong. Yeah.
Yep. And not typical. Not just like a complete throwaway brother. He came in and really, you know, laid out some stuff for her. So the men in the movie were strong characters as well in supporting the women and who they were.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was strong. Even Mr. Bemis coming in at the end, right?
Yes. You know? Chevrong from New Girl.
Okay. Yeah. So Mr. Bemis.
Those of you keeping track of the
minor characters. You know, we always say, you know, how can you tell if it's good? How good is the sidekick?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Know? And so
we'll probably come back to that in a future episode.
We will.
I have a strong theory about
the sidekicks.
The sidekick.
Correct. And so this movie had a lot of great sidekicks,
mm-hmm.
you know, like smaller parts that were integral to even the mother,
mm-hmm.
both mothers,
mm-hmm.
strong parts in there.
Mm-hmm. And even like Awkwafina's character, I don't want us to get back into a discussion of this, but even Awkwafina's character,
yep.
who I think she we didn't see as much of her home life.
Underutilized.
She was underutilized. I would say I want to see a whole movie just about her.
Yeah.
Because she was also very specific though. She was very weird and she was really into philosophy and she had this cool style and she was very weird in a really appealing specific way.
Correct.
So even though she was a little bit more underwritten and underutilized than some of the other characters, she had so much going on that I loved.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Strong movie.
I was
going to go with 82,347.
Wow.
It was strong.
I think that what I'm thinking of is that I'm putting it at above 5. It's above 4 stars for me. So it's between 4 and 5 stars.
Yes.
So it's not I'm my rating I hope is a little maybe I should make it if I'm thinking I'm giving it about 4.5 stars.
You're not.
I should be giving it more like 50,000 kissing booths. I should double that. 50,000.
Yeah. We're going to do a little math on
that
time off.
We'll refine our rating system.
Because
after
I was
this.
Thinking like 4.8, so I want to be in like the 4.8 range.
Okay. I'm giving it a 4.5. So I guess I'll give it 50,000.
I think you're a little low.
I think I was.
Yeah.
I was giving it too few kissing booths.
Yeah, because this is
there's not, a lot of kissing not, booths to give.
This is not my favorite coming of age liminal drama.
No.
But it
very,
is up there.
Very solid entry into
it's
the genre.
Up there, yep.
It's the reason we chose it as our first film.
Yes, it's in the 96th percentile. It's outside of 3 standard deviations.
Okay.
That would be in the 99th. So it's outside of 2 standard deviations.
4.5 stars for
so
me.
So it's in the 96th percentile.
I'm correcting my own math. 50,000. 50,000 kissing booths.
All right.
For Dude.
Some closing music?
Well, should we tell them the film that we're going to be watching next week?
Oh, wow, that would be awesome. And then we'll close with some music.
So for those of you that would like to watch along and listen to our discussion of the film next week, or in the next episode, which will be dropping in 2 weeks, the third Saturday of the month, this next film that we're going to be watching is... Did we decide?
We did decide... And we were debating back and forth,
yes.
but we went with...
This is a little bit out... This is a...
Set it up. Are you going to set it up?
I was slightly going to set it up. I was going to say it is not a teen coming-of-age story.
It is not.
But it is a very strong liminal space movie.
Correct.
It is about that becoming.
Correct. And so we're going to set up the set it up. That one of us watched the set it up after watching Kissing Booth. And one of us watched the set it up after watching Nanette.
So we had very different experiences of the movie.
Correct.
Based on what we had been primed with the previous thing we had seen.
So if you can somehow cleanse your liminal palate before you go in to set it up, it may be better.
Yes. Don't watch anything very, very good and thought-provoking or absolutely unwatchable beforehand.
And that will be in 2 weeks
when we
will continue to
talk nonsense.
Talk nonsense.
I was trying to turn it into a Jaren talk in, but we'll just go with talk nonsense.
Okay. Should we tell them where they can find talk nonsense? Talking nonsense?
Well, we don't know yet, do we?
It's going to be on Podomatic. We're going to put it on Podomatic.
It will be on Podomatic.
Yeah.
And I'll be working on our social media platforms.
Yeah, we'll have a hashtag and all kinds of other stuff later. But this is episode 1, dude. This has been Talking Nonsense with...
Terry and the American Jezebel.
See you in 2 weeks.